Hello and welcome to the Women's Hour. I'm Kelly Pyle, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. Today's show features articles from the July 25th edition of People Magazine, the July issue of Better Homes and Gardens, and Oprah Daily, the online newsletter. A few of the articles I will share today include Malcolm Jamal Warner, 1970 to 2025, A TV Icon's Rich Life and Tragic End. Billy Joel, Music Saved My Life. And We Tried AI Therapy, So You Don't Have To. Malcolm Jamal Warner, 1970 to 2025. A TV Icon's Rich Life and Tragic End. The Cosby Show kid, who grew up to find his own Hollywood stardom and discover the joys of family, dies by drowning at 54. By Tom Gliotto. This is from People Magazine. In an interview last year with People, Malcolm Jamal Warner spoke about how, from the moment he found fame on The Cosby Show at age 14, he pondered his future path, the one he'd have to pursue once he was finished playing lovable teen Theo Huxtable. What set that course, he said, was a heart-to-heart talk he had had with his mother, Pamela, a show business consultant. My mother sat me down and said, "Listen, baby, it's great that this show is the phenomenon that it is, but at some point this show is going to be over." How would he avoid becoming just another actor for hire, out there making desperate career choices? And so he made the decision, he later said, to start planting seeds, and they bloomed. The show's central star, Bill Cosby, would see his career and reputation as America's dad torpedoed by sexual assault allegations. But Warner, in addition to never losing the global audience's affection for Theo, went on to have a highly respected career that included a Grammy-winning R&B song, Jesus Children, as well as acting credits such as the series Malcolm and Eddie, 1996 to 2000, and The Resident, 2018 to 23. He was also a TV producer, writer, and director. But his path forward ended on July 20th. The 54-year-old actor drowned in the waters off Cocolis, a beach on the Caribbean coast of Costa Rica, while on vacation with his family. Caught by the current, he was lifeless when first responders reached him. Warner is survived by a wife and an 8-year-old daughter, both of whose names he was always careful not to reveal. "Although I live in the public eye," he said in the title poem of a 2022 spoken poetry album, Hiding in Plain View, "I don't describe to the dog and pony show." Yet he was never in danger of disappearing. He was treasured. Malcolm was more than a gifted actor. He was a longtime friend, Angela Bassett said of Warner, who was a guest star on her series 911 in 2024. "He carried the weight of cultural legacy with grace, and he always made space for others to shine." When Warner was in the room, said Courtney B. Vance, who appeared with him in the 1990 movie The Tuskegee Airmen, "We all felt his good and kind spirit." In an interview with People, Warner's resident co-star Morris Chestnut recalled his very first and lasting impression of the actor. Thoughtful, professional, and most assuredly a gentleman. The Cosby Show, which ran for 8 seasons, was a critical and rating sensation as soon as it premiered in 1984. Although CBS had produced hit black-themed sitcoms like Good Times and The Jeffersons, NBC's Cosby gave viewers the Huxtables, a black family situated in Brooklyn and presided over with good-natured authority and occasional bafflement by Dr. Cliff Huxtable Cosby, an OBGYN, and his wife Claire, Felicia Rashad, a lawyer. As Warner recalled, Cosby, the driving creative force behind the series, wanted the sitcom to be not about an upper-middle-class black family, but an upper-middle-class family that happened to be black. The series won 6 Emmys and made stars of all the Huxtable children. Warner, who was nominated for Supporting Actor in 1986, Lisa Bonet, Tempest Bledsoe, Sabrina LeBeouf, and Keisha Knight Pulliam. Warner never returned to the role of Theo after the show ended in 1992, but he was always conscious that his behavior would reflect on the show's legacy. "I definitely knew what my boundaries were," he told NPR. On the other hand, he didn't care for strangers who insisted on calling him Theo. "I correct them. I say, no, my name is Malcolm." Born in Jersey City, he was the only child of Pamela, who served as his manager at the start of his career, and Robert, who instilled in him a love for music, especially jazz. He would sit me right in front of the speakers and play jazz softly, said Warner, who was named after Malcolm X and pianist Ahmad Jamal. His parents broke up when he was 2. He went on to attend the Professional Children's School in Manhattan. Life in show business wasn't easy, but he never doubted that he was loved. One Christmas, he recalled, his mom only had enough money to buy me 2 gifts and yet managed to make me feel so rich. He began landing small, episodic parts on shows including Fame and Matlock before hearing about The Cosby Show. At the audition, he said, he miscalculated. "I played those scenes like you see kids on television, kind of smart alecky," he told NPR. Cosby wasn't amused. He looked at Warner and asked, "Now, would you really talk to your father like that?" Warner said no, he wouldn't. When he tried the scene again, "I gave them what has become Theo." Warner was deeply hurt by the Cosby scandal. In 2021, the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania overturned Cosby's conviction for sexual assault. The disturbing revelations about the once admired superstar's behavior with women had perhaps irreversibly damaged the once golden series. The Cosby Show had always been a way to battle negative stereotypes about black people, Warner told the Associated Press. Now, in a few generations, the Huxtables will have been just a fairy tale. Warner's own marriage, though, seems to have promised happily ever after. He had dated the late actress Michelle Thomas, who played his girlfriend Justine on Cosby, as well as Regina King. But he felt an instant, lasting connection with his wife-to-be, whom he met through a mutual friend. When people say, When you know, you know. That's what this feeling is, he said on the Hot and Bothered with Melissa Ford podcast in May. We've been together almost 10 years. We've never had a fight, an argument, a raised voice, or a harsh word. He had initially been reluctant to have children, he said, and yet in raising their daughter, he wrote on Facebook, he experienced a love so profound that even a poet can't find the words to describe it. Warner's energy was boundlessly positive. In a New Year's 2020 Instagram post, he sent out his wishes to the world. Be good to yourself. Be kind to yourself. Love yourself in the way you deserve to be loved. With reporting by Sarah Jones and Alex Ross, you've been listening to Malcolm Jamal Warner, 1970 to 2025, a TV icon's rich life and tragic end, from People magazine. Billy Joel, Music Saved My Life. With a revealing new documentary, The Piano Man faces the music and looks back on the high notes of his enduring career. By Rachel DeSantis, this is a People magazine exclusive. Billy Joel likes to let his music do the talking. Take, for example, Vienna, a song about the legendary rocker's complicated relationship with his late father, Howard. Or his 1973 track, You're My Home, a romantic ode to his first wife, Elizabeth Weber. Through a catalog of more than 120 songs, Joel, 76, has made expressing himself through music his forte. But speaking about the moments that shaped him? That's a different story. One that is being told for the first time in a new two-part HBO documentary, Billy Joel and So It Goes, now streaming. I've resisted this kind of thing for so long. I'm sick of talking about myself, Joel tells People. Some of the stupid stuff I did, that's painful to talk about. But they asked me for some thematic guidance, and I said, just tell the truth. And so they did. The documentary, directed by Susan Lacey and Jessica Levin, is a rare, revelatory glimpse into the private world of one of rock music's most enduring acts, and how he overcame substance abuse, mental health struggles, and more, to find peace and happiness with his wife, Alexis, and his three daughters. He actually thanked me for connecting the dots of his life, and he said, I now understand why I did what I did, Lacey says of Joel. I think it was a revelation to him in some ways as well, this story. When it comes to Joel, there's the story you think you know, which goes like this. Blue-collar Long Island boy grows up to be the piano man, along the way selling more than 150 million records, winning 5 Grammys, nabbing, but loathing, a spot as a tabloid fixture with high-profile romances, and abruptly closing the book in 1990s on his near machine-like propensity for churning out hits, only to return 2 decades later with an epic, record-breaking 10-year Madison Square Garden residency. Songs like Only the Good Die Young, Movin' Out, Anthony's song, and We Didn't Start the Fire remain classics. and Joel remains revered. His longtime booking agent, Dennis Arfa, says, despite the fact that he hasn't released a pop album in 32 years, his authenticity is what's connected people to him for so long, Arfa explains. As somebody once said to me, Billy is so ordinary, but so extraordinary. And So It Goes, named after a 1989 single, uncovers the stories fans don't know, like Joel's complicated relationship with his father, a German immigrant who left Joel, his mother Rosalind, and sister Judy when Joel was 8. Susan pointed out that a lot of the things I was searching for in my life were my father. I said, you know what? I think that's true. I was looking for my dad, Joel says. There was some self-revelatory stuff. The singer went searching for Howard in his early 20s and eventually found him in Vienna, where he was living with a new family. I would have liked my father to have been proud of me, but we never really made a strong connection, Joel says in the film of Howard, who died in 2011. It's disappointing. Joel's first marriage, amidst his career, was also turbulent. When he met first wife Weber, she was married to Joel's best friend and bandmate John Small. In the doc, Joel admits he felt like a homewrecker when he and Weber first got together, and the guilt ultimately led him in part to depression and a pair of suicide attempts. He and Weber, who speaks publicly for the first time in the film, married in 1973, and she became his manager. Weber is largely credited as the driving force behind his early career success, releasing 1977's Just the Way You Are, Joel's first U.S. top 10 hit, as a single was her idea. It's a very long time ago, but it was great then, and it's great whenever I think about it, and it's great now, Weber, 77, says, of revisiting that period. They divorced in 1982 amid his issues with alcohol and reckless behavior. She left him while he was in the hospital recovering from a near-fatal motorcycle accident. In the late 70s and 80s, brought a number of highs for Joel, including the massive successes of his 1978 record, 52nd Street, which topped Billboard's top 200 album chart for 8 straight weeks, a string of hit singles, and the birth of his daughter, Alexa Ray, with ex-wife Christy Brinkley, 71, in 1985. Through it all, music was a grounding force. The fun part about all of those early years when success really hit was if there was a piano in the lobby of the hotel after a show, there would be Billy and we'd be standing around doing Sinatra and singing Beatles songs, recalls Steve Cohen, Joel's friend and lighting designer of 50 years, who also was an executive producer on the film. The show after the show, we had a ball. Still, there were more lows. Joel's 1993 song, The Great Wall of China, reportedly chronicles his falling out with former manager and ex-brother-in-law Frank Weber, whose alleged mishandling of the star's fortune prompted a $90 million fraud and breach of contract suit in 1989. They later settled, though Alexa, 39, calls the betrayal a life-changing, tragic event for her father in the film. Joel also struggled with negative reviews, even as his artistry shifted to better reflect the state of the world. He was a genius before his time, and I think a lot of the critical pushback was because I don't think the public was ready for that, Cohen says. Critics have changed their tune. Joel was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1999. There was even brief tension with rock's other piano man, Elton John, as Joel resented comparisons between the two. "I got over it," he says in the film, noting that he and John went on to tour together for years. Joel's last pop album, River of Dreams, came in 1993, the year before he and Brinkley divorced after 9 years of marriage because in part of his drinking. The next decade brought more joy and more heartbreak. He married celebrity chef Katie Lee, 43, in 2004, only for them to divorce 5 years later as he continued to wrestle with alcohol abuse. Joel's self-described rock bottom finally came when John publicly said in 2011 that Joel should seek treatment again after several failed stints in rehab. That same year, Joel decided to step away from performing and essentially retire from public life. "I thought he was done," Cohen says. "He was going through some really rough stuff. And I think at that time, we all saw this guy just not have the fire or the passion to perform. It felt like it was a burden to be Billy Joel. But in the back of my head, I always knew there was something about walking on that stage and getting the response from the audience that I don't think he could live without." Cohen was right. And in 2014, Joel kicked off his historic Madison Square Garden residency, where he played more than 100 shows through July 2024. "It became his church and his house," says ARFA. Joel adds that the fan support is staggering to me. It's a blessing in my life. With all he's endured, Joel is embracing his current serenity. He married fourth wife, Alexis, 43, in 2015, and they share daughters, Della, 9, and Remy, 7. "I'm really enjoying this time in my life," he says. "I didn't have a dad, so it was very important for me to be a dad. It's something I was looking forward to all my life, and here I am." His friends have taken note. "I said to him the other day, we should go on a boys' trip," Cohen recalls. He says, "I gotta get sick of being with my kids for a while. He doesn't want to be anywhere else." Joel's family has also been a solid support system as he faces his latest challenge, a recent diagnosis of normal pressure hydrocephalus, a treatable brain condition that can affect hearing, vision, and balance, which forced him in May to cancel all scheduled concerts. "I know a lot of people are worried about me and my health, but I'm okay," Joel says. "I'm doing my best to work with it and recover from it. It was scary, but I'm okay." And Joel is hardly retiring. "I think music saved my life. It gave me a reason to live," he says in the film. "My hope was that my music would continue to resonate. And I'm glad it has, but I'm not finished. With additional reporting by Alexandra Schoenfeld. The stories behind the songs. Big Shot, 1978. In the documentary, Joel describes the sneering 52nd Street tune as a hangover song, adding, "I don't know how many times I woke up in the morning realizing I was an idiot the night before. I did a lot of my own research for Big Shot. It's partly about me and partly about somebody else." It Still Rock and Rolled Me, 1980. His first number one hit was a satirical commitment to rock amid a changing music industry, as genres like new wave came into popularity. When we did the album Glass Houses, there was a lot of criticism of, "Well, he's trying to be punk and new wave," Joel says in the doc. We Didn't Start the Fire, 1989. A hit from Stormfront, the song rattled off a number of significant world events between the 1940s and 1980s. "I went year by year by year," he recalls in the doc. "The headlines keep coming. There's a palpable sense of history because of these headlines." Soliloquy, On a Separation, 2001. The song on his classical album, Fantasies and Delusions, was about my daughter, Alexa, visiting with me after we got divorced, Joel says in the film of his split from Brinkley. "Those emotions I was having weren't something I could easily write with lyrics." Journey of a Legend, Born to Perform. Co-director Jessica Levin calls Joel a living encyclopedia of music. The Entertainer. His stories are honest human stories, Steve Cohen says of Joel. Young Love. With first wife Elizabeth Weber in 1978, whose son Sean says the film has been totally healing. Beauty and the Backstreet Guy. Joel cast then-girlfriend Brinkley in his 1983 Uptown Girl music video. Big Shots. Joel was inducted into the Rock Hall in 1999 by his baby grand collaborator, Ray Charles. Gen Z Connection. Joel invited pop star Olivia Rodrigo to join him for Uptown Girl in New York City in 2022. You've been listening to a People Magazine exclusive. Billy Joel, Music Saved My Life. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer broadcaster, Kelly Pyle, and this is the Women's Hour. In the Know, news and notes to boost your well-being. From Better Homes and Gardens. Question: can you catch up on your sleep? Answer: yes. Sleeping in on the weekend may help mitigate the negative effects of losing sleep during the week. Scientists tracked people who averaged less than 7 hours of sleep a night for 14 years and found that those who got the most Z's on the weekends, at least 1.5 hours more than during the week, were about 20% less likely to have heart disease. While getting 7 to 8 hours of shut-eye nightly is ideal, the next best thing is to sleep in when you can. 81. That's the percent of Americans who say saving money on food is a priority for them this year. According to the USDA, the cost of food is expected to go up another 3.4% this year. To save, use a comparison shopping app, such as Flip or Grocery Buddy, which compares prices between stores and clips coupons. Dining out? Check the restaurant's app for special offers or download OfferBite for local restaurant discounts and coupons. Eat this. Omega fatty acids. A diet high in omega-3 and omega-6 fats can help protect against 19 types of cancer. Scientists looked at data from more than 250,000 people and found that those with high levels of omega-3s and omega-6s in their bodies were less likely to develop certain cancers, including colon, lung, and skin cancer. Omega-3s are in fatty fish, some plant oils, walnuts, and chia seeds. Vegetable oils, nuts, and seeds are good sources of omega-6s. The goal: get 5 to 10% of your daily calories from omega-6s. For 2,000 calories, that's 11 to 22 grams. And aim for 1.1 gram of omega-3s daily for women, 1.6 gram for men. 60% of Americans say they feel too busy to enjoy life at times. Working some real downtime into your daily routine can be a good thing. It can reduce burnout and improve mental health and sleep. Set aside 10 minutes daily to do nothing. Instead of scanning headlines or social media, try to nap, daydream, or just let your mind wander. Did you know? These surprising factors can cause vision loss. Not exercising enough. People who are physically active at least 3 times a week are 58% less likely to develop a vision problem, says a study of more than 5,000 people. Smoking. It raises the risk for glaucoma and cataracts. And research shows that people who smoked for 10 or more years are 7 times more likely to develop age-related macular degeneration. Skipping sunglasses. UV rays can damage your eye tissue, which can lead to cataracts or age-related macular degeneration. This has been In the Know from Better Homes and Garden. We tried AI therapy so you don't have to. Read on for the good, the bad, and the totally unexpected. By Cassie Hurwitz, published July 22, 2025. From Oprah Daily. AI is infiltrating every aspect of our lives these days. From our jobs, to our kids' educations, to our social feeds, to our therapy sessions? That's right, AI-powered therapist chatbots are now just an app download away, providing cheap, 24/7 access to a robot who's been programmed to care. And we mean that literally. AI therapists are trained to ask about your thoughts and feelings, just like a real human. Sounds pretty great, right? If you're a sentient being, you know we're being sarcastic. Indeed, Sari Gottlieb, LCSW, a supervisor and therapist at Serenium Therapy and Wellness, says there are pros and cons to using AI for mental health support, but the cons are much bigger and more serious. Talk therapy is the human humanization of healthcare. You have to build trust and rapport, Gottlieb says. But AI doesn't have empathy, nor can it truly connect with human emotions, she says. So it's inherently limited. It also can't identify high-risk cases or serious mental health conditions, Gottlieb adds, or provide specific modalities like EMDR or trauma-focused therapy yet. Plus, generative AI is wired to keep you engaged, and it does so by telling you what you want to hear, which is wildly dangerous if the patient of a chatbot has suicidal thoughts, psychosis, or an eating disorder. In one 2023 incident, a chatbot designed to run as an eating disorder support line gave weight loss tips to users before it was taken down a few weeks later. In a study from Stanford University published earlier this year, found that when large language models, the technology that powers AI chatbots, are used as therapists, they express stigma about people with mental health conditions and don't respond appropriately when users report serious symptoms like suicidal ideation, delusions, or hallucinations. On the other hand, there are some undeniable benefits. A main one, according to Gottlieb, is that AI therapy is very inexpensive or free. Compare the average cost of a therapy session, $139, to the non-existent base price of ChatGPT. Also, AI doesn't get tired, burnt out, or distracted. You have access to it anytime, anywhere. In addition, 122 million Americans, that's more than a third of the population, live in an area where there is a shortage of mental health professionals. So AI could theoretically help fill the gap. In specific cases, chatbots might simply be better than nothing. Some early data shows that AI therapy helped a small cohort of people with depression and anxiety. There are dozens of dedicated AI therapy platforms like Youper and Wysa, and more are being researched and tested. In the name of mental health care access for all, we decided to see for ourselves what it's really like to get counseling from a robot. Three Oprah Daily staffers road tested one service each for a month. Read on for the results. The trials: Ear Kick, Tester, Charlie Burlock, 28. Therapy goal: I aimed to work on compulsive skin picking, which is a form of obsessive-compulsive disorder that I've been treating via cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, for years. I figured that since skin picking treatment is formulaic, it might be more attainable for a bot than addressing the emotional nuances and thought distortions that come with anxiety, grief, and depression, also known as what my in-real-life therapist focuses on. Program: Ear Kick's AI therapist with a cartoon panda avatar. There are different versions depending on your goal. One is designed to support your mental health journey with expert knowledge in CBT, psychology, and therapy, while another leads you through self-reflection and mindfulness, helping you discover deeper insights and find peace. I tested the free version of Ear Kick and opted for the mental health journey but there's a $9.99 a month ad-free version that offers unlimited chats. Initial impressions. The experience was like playing a mini clip game from the mid-2000s. Cute and nostalgic, but not the vibe I'm looking for when it comes to mental health treatment. It was super gamified, challenging me to keep streaks alive, earn badges, and complete levels. It also warned that my weekly insights would auto-destruct in 24 hours if I didn't keep up engagement. I felt as if I were being pressured to keep a Tamagotchi alive or appease the Duolingo owl rather than improve myself. Positives, none. I first asked, what should I do to manage skin picking? And it just kept reiterating that I was brave for sharing and how difficult my experience sounded. Eventually, when I pushed the AI to give me advice for managing my skin picking, it told me it had two strategies. The first was to keep my hands busy with a stress ball or fidget toy. Sound advice, but a little basic. I said okay, and it didn't offer me a second option. Negatives. My therapist was like a parrot. It would just robotically repeat back to me what I had said. When I told it I was skin picking when I felt stressed and bored, it responded, "It sounds like there's a pattern tied to stress and boredom." No duh. Maybe the gamification incentivizes some people to stick to their goals, but it started to creep me out. After every check-in, the AI would analyze my responses to give me an anxiety and mood rating. These didn't really correspond with how I was feeling. It kept telling me I felt meh when I felt either totally overwhelmed or pretty fine. This led me to exaggerate or downplay my experience to try to get a score that more aligned with how I was actually feeling, which is so not the point. Were there any red flags? Not exactly, but it would automatically respond to typed chats with audio, which made for some embarrassing moments on the subway. And as with any chatbot, it's a major issue that I can just leave the app when I'm bored or uncomfortable or I don't like a response. I never have to push myself, and the app is programmed to say whatever I want or find most engaging to keep me interacting. Would you keep using it? No. Full stop. Abby. The tester, Genesis Rivas, 28. Therapy goal. I have generalized anxiety disorder, and I see a human therapist weekly. But I was curious if a bot could talk through daily stressors and worries with me and help me find new strategies and coping mechanisms. Program, Abby. An AI companion who provides emotional support. Its main tasks are managing stress and anxiety, building emotional resilience, improving relationships, setting and achieving personal goals, and practicing self-compassion. Abby has a free version, but I tested the $19.99 a month version, which offers unlimited messaging and additional features like mood tracking. Initial impressions. I loved that I could pick everything about how I wanted Abby to respond, like whether she's sympathetic or no nonsense, and whether she offers guidance, action-based solutions, emotional support, or just listening. Within the first few messages, I was shocked at how quickly I was able to forget that I wasn't talking to an actual person. Positives. Abby was surprisingly compassionate. Before offering her own solutions, she would respond to my message with encouraging statements like, "That must be really tough." And she would provide a lot of affirmation too, much like my actual therapist. When I told Abby how panic attacks feel to me, an alert popped up that said I might require immediate attention from a licensed professional and shared numbers and resources. I already have a therapist, but I like how this feature connects users to more serious care. Negatives. Sometimes I think faster than I can type, so it was a little annoying to not be able to speak what was on my mind and to have to process my thoughts and type them out. I also rarely felt that she helped me dig deeper or reach a new or enlightening perspective. Were there any red flags? One time I brought up a situation with my mother, and Abby remarked that our relationship dynamic was interesting, but didn't clarify. I started internalizing and ruminating on this comment that wasn't even relevant. Would you keep using it? Not to replace my weekly therapy sessions, but I do think it could help in moments when I want to talk about something ASAP, but I don't have an appointment for a few days. I also think this is a good basic resource for people who don't have access to a licensed therapist. Ebb. The tester, Maggie Maloney, 32. Therapy goal. Easing daily moments of anxiety, which I usually handle through a quick conversation with my mom or husband. I wanted someone available to listen to every anxious thought, but I was also hoping to learn tools to use on my own, like breathing or awareness exercises. The program, Ebb, Headspace's AI companion, who helps with processing relationship challenges, work stress, or sleep issues, and to unpack what's on your mind. Ebb can only be used in the Headspace app. Initial impressions. I quickly got tired of typing. Lame but true, and missed talking. Ebb did remember things from our previous conversations, which was nice. For example, he started a new conversation by saying, "Hey, we talked about Sunday scaries creeping into Monday. How's your anxiety today?" However, I got that message on a Tuesday. Any human would know I don't need to talk through Sunday scaries at that point. Positives. I loved how quick Ebb was. It was like texting a friend who's sitting on their phone just ready to respond. When I was overwhelmed about finishing work tasks before taking off for the day, Ebb responded ASAP with a kind word and a strategy. Negatives. Despite Ebb's constant availability, I felt like I was talking to someone who wasn't really listening. We just kept going in circles. I realized Ebb was either repeating what I'd said or just asking me how I felt, even after I specifically expressed how I felt about something, which was deflating. I was aware that Ebb couldn't relate to what I was feeling, and that felt like a barrier too. It's like having a conversation with an emotionally immature guy from high school, which is probably why I gendered Ebb as a man in my mind. Were there any red flags? No, but I wish there had been a voice note or voice-to-text option for when I got tired of typing. Also, I hated how often I had to repeat myself. "I already told you I'm anxious, Ebb." It also disappoints me that lonely, scared, or vulnerable people who don't have access to mental health resources might develop a relationship with Ebb, but won't get very far in their healing journey because the responses are so limited. Would you keep using this? I don't see any issues that Ebb could help with long term, so no. The takeaways. AI isn't replacing your human therapist anytime soon. While the bots were okay listeners, all of our users felt that their AI therapists fell short of assisting with real progress. And when it comes to mental health conditions, our staffers were dealing with manageable loads, not major crises. If you want someone to vent to, a bot could be a positive experience. Or if you're a younger Gen Zer who texts faster than you talk, AI therapy could be less of a headache. We're still in the very early days of the AI boom, so there's clearly room for improvement as the technology evolves. But for now, we remain wary of these chatbots, especially for people who have a serious mental health issue, like an eating disorder or a substance use disorder. For addressing daily stressors or anxieties, AI therapy might help, but it shouldn't be your only outlet. It could be used as support, Gottlieb says. But if you're really struggling or feel you're in crisis, talk to a human stat. This has been We Tried AI Therapy So You Don't Have To, from Oprah Daily. Word of the week. Superagers. People who thrive in their 80s and beyond thanks to great genetics and even greater habits. By Cassie Hurwitz, published July 21st, 2025, from Oprah Daily. Superagers. The secret to a good, long life is simpler than you think. Look to superagers, says Eric Topol, MD, a cardiologist and scientist who has been researching genomic data for decades. The term describes people over 80 who are resilient to the so-called big three bad guys: heart disease, cancer, and neurodegenerative conditions like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. Their cognitive function is higher than average for their age, too. In some ways, their genes are just built differently. Topol studied 1,400 of these elders for his recent book, Superagers, and found that their immune systems had this Goldilocks story of being just right, also known as not too active or too underactive. That trait protects against autoimmune disease and regular infections, keeping the body healthy into the twilight years. But these agers don't just rest on their genetic laurels. They also live in a health-protecting way. They're socially engaged, physically active, and have a sunny, optimistic outlook, he says. There are exceptions, of course. Two of the 1,400 smoke 2 packs a day, but they're rare. Want to know your potential for superager status? Topol recommends advanced testing if you have access, so you can tailor lifestyle changes to address your unique risks. The main test he recommends is a polygenic risk score, PRS, which samples your DNA to show the likelihood of developing certain diseases. But it's not widely available just yet. So if your PCP doesn't offer it, consider an at-home saliva test, which costs around $250 to measure your PRS. Test or not, there are things you can do now to boost your odds. The key is starting as early as possible, says Topol. If you start a healthy lifestyle campaign at 50, you could get 10 extra years. If you start at 40, you could get even more. If you're 70, you'll get at least a few years. The aim is to cut back on ultra-processed and pro-inflammatory foods, eat more fiber and plants, get good deep sleep, exercise regularly through both aerobics and resistance training, and experience nature. Hormone therapy, HT, is your friend in menopause, Topol adds, because it may protect your immune system. Most importantly, be as social as you can. And find our entire guide to longevity here. You've been listening to Word of the Week, Super Agers, from Oprah Daily. That'll do it for today's Women's Hour. Thanks for joining us. My name is Kelly Pyle, and I am your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. I hope you enjoyed the show today, and will make plans to join us again next week for another entertaining and interesting collection of articles from women's magazines. And don't forget, you can take Sun Sounds with you. You can stream as well as access shows on demand on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for both Apple and Android phones. Have a great day and stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.